Okay, so we'll start with Shlach now. Now, the biggie in Shlach is the Meraglim, the spies. You also have the Parsha of Tzitzis, you also have the Parsha of Challah, you also have the Parsha of the one who's Mechallel Shabbos by gathering the wood. But I'll take the easy way, out and talk about the Meraglim. Okay, the Meraglim, basically, is that the Jewish people went to Moshe, they're literally on the cusp of Eretz Yisrael. They're on the border. All you gotta do is take a few steps and they're in. Now all of a sudden Klaiso approaches Moshe Rabbeinu, says, send spies. We gotta check out the land. Moshe thinks about it. He hears it. And then he approaches the Ribbono Shel Olam, and Hashem gives the famous answer of Shlach Lecha Anashim. Send for yourselves people. Rashi quotes or explains right away why the word Lecha, send for yourself, because Rashi said L'daitcha. In other words, this is your idea. If it's your idea, I can't promise if it's going to work. But if it was my idea, I can promise you it would work. But since this was initiated by you and the people, I can tell you, I can only acquiesce to say, okay, you can send them. What happens after that is not up to me. I'm taking no responsibility. And lo and behold, they came back after 40 days, speaking Lashon Hara about the land. And the people cry, as they say, B'chios Shochinum, wasted tears. And the Meraglim themselves were punished, 10 out of the 12. Kalev and Yoshua, who bucked them and said that the land is very good, they remained alive and they were able to enter the land. But the other 10 died in the Midbar. And whoever cried, the 20 to 60 bracket, died in the Midbar also. So for that whole generation died out. This is a generation that left Mitzrayim. This is a generation that received the Torah, but never, in other words, saw the end of the journey, which was Vaisi El Amokam, bring me into the I'll bring you into the land of Eretz Yisrael, the coast of Eliho. They never got an opportunity to see the land of Eretz Yisrael. They died in the Midbar. So the obvious question is, who are these 12 people? Rashi starts off saying they were chashuvim, important people. They were like leaders of that generation. And the way they're listed is important how great they are. The first one listed was the greatest. And the last one listed was the least greatest. But they were all great. It's like saying this is like a Hall of Fame class. And then if you look, Yoshua and Kalev, they're not in the top. They're somewhere in the middle. That means Yoshua and Kalev themselves weren't even the greatest of these spies, these Meraglim. So the question is, if we're talking about people who left Mitzrayim, who experienced Matan Torah, and they are the greatest of that generation, what went wrong? What went wrong? That's the question. So I just would like to explain a few different approaches, and then see if we can tie it in together. So the first one, I like to explain, some of them are a little maybe on the esoteric side, some are like a real practical musar. So Rav Gedalia Shor explains that there is a fundamental difference between the door that left Mitzrayim and the door of the generation that was going to enter the land. The generation that left Mitzrayim was the generation of Or, light. The generation entering Israel was the door of Choshech, darkness. Why does that mean? He gets a little very much detailed, but I'll try to keep it simple. Or I think because when the Jews left Mitzrayim, the revelations that Hashem was throwing to the world lit up everyone's neshama. There was no Zeh Keli Van Deo. There was such an illumination of God's Shekhinah, of God's presence when they left Mitzrayim, that it was full of the whole world was Or, light. But when they went to enter Eretz Yisrael, and that, once again, I'm going to just backtrack, and that revelation continued all 40 years into the Midbar, throughout the Midbar, with the Anani Akava, the Man, the Be'er Shel Miriam. It was God taking care of them openly. But then when they were going to enter Eretz Yisrael, all that was going to stop. Now they had to go find a piece of land, start plowing, start tilling, start planting, start doing all the watering, all the work. They had to do everything themselves. There was no knock on the door with Man. You wanted a piece of white bread or toast for breakfast? You had to go out there, grow the wheat, make the toaster. So the whole process probably took 7 months. You say, Mom, can I have a piece of toast for breakfast? Okay, now in 7 months it'll be ready. So that's what it was like. That's why it's Choshech. Because God's help was darkened. You had to fight through the Teva nature to see the Yad Hashem and everything. That's why it's called Choshech. So Rabbi Gedalia Shor explains that from the moment of Vayehi B'Tzor HaAron, as we discussed last week, which is set off by the nuns, that whole hanhaga started to decrease a little. Of the Giloy, things started to go downhill. And they knew that it was coming soon, that there was going to be more Teva in their life. So they said, what was their cheshbon, what was their calculation to send spies? Since we're going to be living a natural existence in Eretz Yisrael, the natural thing to do is send in spies and check out the land. Yoshua did it when he was about to enter the land. There was no problems with that. But this, there was a problem because they still should have believed that they were on the level of Or, that he really didn't need to do it. So Moshe was like stuck in between. He heard their taina. So he asked Hashem, so what should I do? He says, okay, send them. But just remember, it's Lecha. It's your idea. They really should be on a different level, that they shouldn't want or need the feeling or the necessity to check out the land with spies, because they're on a higher level now. So, the question is, Gedalia Shor explains, the nisayon of the Meraglim was that they were being sent by two different people, the people and Moshe. The people had one agenda, and Moshe had a different agenda. Moshe wanted to show everyone that the land is exactly how Hashem explained it to be, Eretz Chem D'Tova Rechava, but the people were looking like for something else. So the nisayon of the people were, they're going to come back. Are they going to come back as the messenger of the people or the messenger of Moshe? And they failed that nisayon because they came back with the messenger as messengers of Bnei Yisrael. That's why they came with all the negativity, because Klal Yisrael somehow had that netiyah, they were like straying or turning to that point of, we're not ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. We don't want, it's better to live this type of existence as opposed to the Tevatic existence. I don't know if that means they were spoiled or they just felt they don't want to live in a land, a life of Choshek, they'd rather live in a life of Or. So that's what they got from the Meraglim. They got a report of the land is not good, there are giants there, we felt like grasshoppers, people are dying all the time, the climate's not good, the agriculture is not good, why bother? So then they started to cry. Because they felt they were going down by going into Eretz Yisrael. Their existence in life was going to be much harder. That's one approach of what went wrong. So Rabbi Zev Hoberman, Zichrono Livracha, explains also what went wrong. What were they thinking? He explained, there's a Gemara that says, the greater you are than someone else, the greater your Yetzirah. So I know Rav Volbe explains, like, so you expect the Rav, the Rosh Hashiva, his Yetzirah to go to McDonald's is stronger than a regular Baal Bus. So he explains that's not the Pshat. So the Yetzirah for a Rav or a Rosh Hashiva, he's standing on the Mizrach, he's davening Shmona Esrei. So the Yetzirah says, everyone's looking at you, and they're going to be waiting for you to start Chazaras HaShatz. So you look better if you shuckle a little bit more, looks like you have a little bit more kavana. Looks better if you daven a little more, and yeah, looks, you put on a better show. Because since he's more spiritual, when he gets to that level, he gets to the Mizrach, he's more spiritual, therefore the Yetzirah has to be more spiritual also, to fight against that. So he's fighting him on the Gaiva side. You got this position, you're dressed in a long coat, and you know, in that big hat. So look the part, play the part better. That's more spiritual. Now us, we who are more physical, maybe myself, so our Yetzirah, my Yetzirah, is going to be more on the physical side, not the Gaiva side. Maybe one day. Okay. So, Rabbi Oberman explains, what's shot in that? That if you're greater than your friend, your Yetzirah is greater. See, he explains this with the Chet of Adam and Chava. And he says, with the Eitz Hadas, there's an opinion that says that there's a machlokes and what the fruit actually was. One opinion says it was the Esrog. It was literally an Esrog. They ate the Esrog. What's so special about an Esrog? The Gemara explains that when Hashem, Rashi quotes it also, when Hashem originally created vegetation, it was supposed to be that the trees were supposed to taste exactly as the fruit. But forever, however and whatever it means, they rebelled against God, and all the trees did not listen, so the fruit tasted like the fruit, and the tree probably tasted like what a tree tastes like. I don't know if anyone ever tasted a tree. Except for the Esrog. The Esrog listened. Eitzo Kapirio. Its wood, its bark, is the same as the fruit. So I don't know if that means if you take an Esrog tree and cut off one of the bushes and the leaves, you get the same taste as an Esrog. I never tried it. Now, what does that mean? And why does that make the Esrog so good? Because anything that, so to speak, goes above what nature should be, automatically becomes greater. So since the rest of the trees did not listen to Hashem, except for the Esrog, that automatically, I don't know if that means like, when you want someone to volunteer, if everyone takes a step back, so the Shlemiel, who didn't take the step back, is now the volunteer. And they say, the Esrog that listened, now became the most beautiful, desirable fruit. Why? Because it listened to Hashem. And since it was greater than all the other fruit that listened, that disobeyed Hashem, therefore it had a greater Yetzihara. What was the great Yetzihara of the Esrog? That it was Nechmad. It was desirable. If you look at the Esrog, Adam and Chava said, what a beautiful fruit. They didn't look at the apple and say, what a beautiful fruit. They said, oh, it's an apple. But the Esrog was like, gotta have it. But Hashem said, no. We all know how the story goes. Because it was greater than all the other fruit and vegetation in Gan Eden, it became more Nechmad. It had a greater Yetzirah attached to it. So, he explains, Rav Oberman applies this to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the most desirable of all lands, has the most kedusha of all lands. So in other words, it's greater than everything, any possible of land in the world. And because it's so greater and more loftier than others, it's so separated, automatically there's a greater Yetzirah that's going to be attached to the land. So therefore, the Meraglim and the people felt it's not worth going into the land if we're going to have a greater Yetzirah that comes automatically attached to the land. Why should we want that? Mes Pshan Choshech also. The Yetzirah is so great, the Choshech just surrounds us with darkness and gray matter and makes it harder for us to discern what's good and what's bad and what's in between. So they don't want to go into that land of Choshech with tough nisyonos. Tougher nisyonos. And he explains that's the Zohar that says all of the Meragim thinking. They said, right now we're leaders. If we go to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to lose our jobs. And other people are going to take over us. So that sounds very, very selfish. We're going to cause a whole nation to not go into Eretz Yisrael because of our own agenda? So he explains that's what they were thinking also. Since we're going to be in a land that's higher than everyone else, and we are higher than everyone else, therefore our Yetzirah is going to be even bigger. We might not be able to stand up to that Yetzirah and we might lose our jobs. So we'd rather stay here with a lesser Yetzirah and keep the job. And it'll be better for the Jews also. I think that's Rav Dessel also when he explains the Eitz Hadas. The question was, is it better to serve Hashem with the Yetzirah or to serve Hashem without the Yetzirah? And they calculate it's better with the Yetzirah because you get more scar. So he explains that right off. So I think that fits all in. It's all calculations. Everyone's making cheshbonos. And that's sort of Oberon. Now, on the more Musar level, the word vateirognu is applied to the Meraglim. It's a very strange word. They rognu ba'aleichem. They rognu, what I'm not going to translate now, in their tents. So he says here, v'tei rognu hu bitui shel lo shchiach. It's a very unfamiliar word. Lo b'tanach, lo b'sfas hayom yom shalanu. It's not in the Tanakh, and it's not in our everyday language. So what does it mean? What's a nargain? Nargain hu adam shem tamed yesh b'fiv tulunos. He's a kvetcher. Nothing's ever good. You go to a wedding, everything was great except the pickles are too sour. So he said, the pickles, they're going down and going up on the pickles. Okay, that's the person because he's the half-empty person. Always fetching, always seeing the negative. So Klal Yisrael was looking for the negative, and the Meraglim also were looking for the negative. So therefore, when they came back with the negativity, they said, oh, great, that's what we were looking for. But even negativity, I think, is once again like any other midah. Negativity, if you channel it the right way, it can turn into something positive, depending how you're using it and when you're using it. Now, I can just go on a tangent for a second. In Parshas Miketz, when the brothers go down. Once again, 10 brothers, there's 10 bad spies. They go down to Mitzrayim to buy food. What's the first thing Yosef says to them? No? I know. What does he accuse them of? You are spies. And they say, no, we're not spies. We just came to buy food. No, you are spies. No. We bought our credit card. If you want, we'll pay cash also. Okay, no sales tax if you don't want. Okay, and he said, no, you're spies. He's hacking at the spies. Spies, spies. Why? Why didn't he call them cattle rustlers? Why is he hacking them that they're spies? That you came out to spy out the land. So I think the pshat is that we see from the Meraglim that the Meraglim were negative people. I think that's the job of a spy usually. You're looking for a weakness. If you go into if your country is at war, and you're sent as a spy into the other country that they're fighting, you're looking for the weaknesses. You're looking for the negativity in the other people. So the Meraglim went in there looking for the really what they were supposed to do is look for the negativity and how to fight them. The strength, not the negativity of the land, the negativity how we can win the war, because there's a weakness there. There's a front that's not shielded over there. But they decide to look at the negativity of the land and feed into the negativity of Klal Yisrael. And that's what Yosef was saying to his brothers. You're Meraglim. You have a negative outlook. I had these dreams, and the dreams was not about me being a melech. It was about the destiny of Klal Yisrael. There was a bigger picture out there that you missed. But you missed it because you have a negative attitude. You hear things and you look at the negative point of it. That's why you got jealous of me and you hated me and you sold me. All this mess happened to me is because your attitude was negative. You had a broader attitude, the bigger picture, then everything would have worked out differently and probably better. So that's how the Meraglim across the board work together. But negativity, that if everything you see is always going to have a negative slant on it, that's not good. Because no person is ever going to be good enough for you. No school is ever good enough for you. Nothing's ever going to be good enough. Because there's always going to be some negativity you can hack on and focus on and magnetize it. And then get other people on board to do the same thing. So that's one meter that we have to try to stay away from, that we learn from the Meraglim. Another thing that Rav Dessel explains on this is, he says that there is a this superficial thing that you see, and then there's a deeper level that you see. If you look at just at the superficial things, yes, you could say Eretz, even today, you could say Eretz Yisrael, why in the world would I want to live there? You know, this is bad, that's for the Arabs, or this, and all that. But you got to be able to train yourself to look beyond. I once gave an example. Imagine these people came from a foreign island and they come to America and they're hungry. So you give them an orange. And when the first thing after a few minutes, they give it back to you and they say, it tastes disgusting. And how can an orange taste disgusting? It's sweet. Sweet? It's sour. Well, how'd you eat it? They ate it like an apple. They took a bite out of the peel. So they never got to the underneath part, the real sweet part. So you have to tell them, that's superficial. You go beneath the surface, you find the ichor part of the fruit. That's the fruit itself, not the skin. But you have to have patience to peel away the layers to see what you're really supposed to see. You see the beauty. The Meraglim, they saw the superficiality of Eretz Yisrael. Yes, there were a lot of funerals going on while they were there. There were a lot of tall people. Yes, they looked as chagavim, as grasshoppers, on the superficial level. But if they would have gone in with a better attitude, more positive attitude, of seeing a bigger picture, they would, in 4 days, they would have been able to peel away everything that they seen and see what Eretz Yisrael is really all about. If they had a different attitude, if they had more patience. If they would have came back with a different attitude, the Klal Yisrael, they were ready to believe Yoshua and Kalev. As soon as they said, no, it's a good land, we can go in and conquer it. So they joined Yoshua and Kalev. Then the other Meraglim said, no. So they wished they were trying to play both sides of the fence. But they were ready to believe a good report. So if the 10 spies would have come back with a better report, more positive report, they would have come back with the, so to speak, the arms, and not just the peel. They brought back these gigantic clusters of grapes. So that scared the people. Because superficially, if that's what the fruits are, then you imagine what the people are. But if you just describe it in a deeper sense, he goes, the panemius of it, not just the chitzonius, then you get a different reaction. And I think, what leads you to make those mistakes of having a negative reaction to things, having a superficial look at ways? I think we go back to the first two things, what the Rav Hoberman or Gedalia Shor said. Has to do with cheshbonos. If we have our own personal agenda attached to what we're doing, then everything we see is shaded and jaded. And we won't be able to see what's really the point. We won't be able to see the panemius. We're stuck looking at the chitzonius. We make cheshbonos why it's better to live in a midbar than it is to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's all because we have our own agendas. We have what we call cheshbonos. And as we said, started with Adam and Chava, they had their own cheshbonos with is it better to eat or not to eat? The answer is, I think that, you know, Rabbi Wein had this great vart many years ago. He said this at a Sheva Brachas. No, Shavuot Shavuot. Says the two times you find the word Lecha in Torah used very similarly. Shlach Lecha in this parsha, send for yourself. Then he tells Avram, Lech Lecha, go for yourself. There, Lech Lecha is a bracha. Here, Shlach Lecha turns out to be a klola. So when is Lecha good and when is Lecha bad? So he said brilliantly, just look in the psukim. He said, Lech Lecha, Vayidaber, it says, Hashem said to Moshe, Lech Lecha. If you're following God's directions exactly the way He told you to do it, then the Lecha will always be a bracha for you. But if you're doing Shlach Lecha, it's your idea, it's your cheshbonus, I'm trying to outsmart the Rabbeinu Shalom, then it's going to turn out to be a klola. And I think we see that very often when we try to outthink the Rabbeinu Shalom. I believe the only time Moshe really did anything wrong that I really got punished for was at Mei Meriva, when he was supposed to talk to the rock instead of hit the rock. He made a cheshbon, if I hit the rock, we'll make a bigger Kiddush Hashem. You might have been right, but who asked you? Sometimes we all, you think someone asks you to do something, and they do it a little differently, because they think it will be better. But maybe that's not what I wanted. I asked you to do it this way because I had a reason to do it, X, Y, and Z, not A, B, and C. I think the nature of a person is to be independent, not to be dependent. So even if someone were told to do something, there's always a part of us that says, I can still do it myself. I learned with someone during the week, and he told me a vart, that it's interesting that there's an avera of when you bring a carbon of pigle or noser. Noser is that you eat a carbon outside the prescribed time limits. If you have a day and a night, you eat it after the night. And there's some that have two nights in a day. So if you eat it outside that barrier, that's noser. Or that the meat becomes noser and has to be burned. Pigle is if you have the wrong thoughts when the carbon's being shechted, then becomes pigle and also has to be burnt, and you're not allowed to eat it. So this person pointed out it's very interesting that the laws of pigle and noser are taught by a carbon that's a nedava, that's a voluntary offering. So he was pshat. So I told him we were very similar in what we both thought. He said that people, even when they're doing a voluntary act, they got to follow the rules exactly the way Hashem said. Because even when I'm doing it on my own, I still want to keep a little bit of my independence of thinking. That it's my carbon. God didn't ask me to do it. I'm not required to bring it. So therefore, I feel I should have the freedom to eat it whenever I want. Even then, you have to follow the rules of the carbon. There's no room for independence in that. A carbon is only a true carbon when it's done exactly the way Hashem wanted. That's how you get karov to the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Closer to our Kaddish Baruch Hu is when we follow the rules. Now, there is room in following the rules for self-expression, but that also has to be somehow within the rules. That's why there's so many different minhagim, what we do, but it has to be done within the box of the rules. Otherwise, you're pretty much making your own religion. And there's no room for that. We'll see that in Parshas Kolach next week, Mitzvah Hashem. There's no room for freedom that's going to create a new religion. Because you can call it whatever you want, but it ain't Judaism. You can call it your religion, but it's not Hashem's religion. That's the bottom line. So I think what we can take away from the Meraglim is the importance of understanding that Hashem gives us directives. Our goal is to try to follow them to the best of our ability. Try to take away our own personal agendas, and then we'll be able to see the true essence of what we're supposed to be doing, not just the superficial part, but the panemius, the inner part that glows, that's going to bring us closer to Hashem. And Mitzvah Hashem, next time we have the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael, when Mashiach comes, we'll go, no questions asked, no spies needed, we'll just get there, and Mitzvah Hashem, the Shir will continue next week in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, thank you all for coming and braving the elements.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, the cheer will be